Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.paxinc.org. While you're on the website, you can click on the tab that says the code to learn more about the codes of conduct that PAX Inc. have created to help Black America work more as a cohesive unit. And PAX Inc. has a lot more information for survival, disaster preparedness, and all other things that we as a black community could use. So make sure you check out the website. While you're online, make sure, as you already know, go to our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about me. Don't worry about Pat, just learn more about me and listen to, I'm just playing, but learn more about us and listen to the playbacks of your favorite shows and learn more about our guests. Follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow us on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Subscribe to the Freedom Train on either iTunes or Google Play. And you can subscribe to our Freedom Train YouTube channel as well. I mean, we're everywhere. So you can't say I don't know about the Freedom Train because we everywhere. What's up, Pat?
I'm mad at you, man. Playboy.
Oh, you want to rap again?
Look, like every week I be like, I'm a spit. And every week you talk through the whole intro music. Not even like three quarters of it. You talk through the whole intro music.
You want to know why?
Nah, we don't count. We don't count.
You sure you? I'm going to tell you why, Pat.
Look, bro.
Because you ain't blessing.
What we need to do, boy, I'm hot, boy. I'm hot in 21. But hold on, boy. Don't do it. Hey.
You got it. You got the juice.
What you need to do is create a checklist for the Freedom Train website and say you need to go to the Freedom Train website and scroll down and do everything on the checklist.
No.
Okay.
So
what we got this week, Joe?
This week, hey, hold on, Pat. I wasn't ready. I'm going to start when I'm ready. Okay, I'm ready now. But you don't tell me when to start.
We got guests, bro. Okay. Don't be acting fancy, bro.
Look at here. All right, now. This week on the Freedom Train, we have a good one for you because we have Mr. Maurice Rush and Miss Jasmine Poole, who are both advocates for autism and as well as an author of a book called Reese Has Cereal. And we're going to learn more about both of them, Maurice and Jasmine, and their advocacy within the world of autism, and so we can get more information so we ourselves can be more of an advocate. So without further ado, I will welcome once again Mr. Maurice Rush and Ms. Jasmine Poole. Welcome to the Freedom Train.
Hello, hello.
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having us, Joe.
Yes, thanks for having us today. Hey. We're so excited.
And Patrick, I could rap with you too, man. So when you put the beat on, I'll give you a second verse.
There you go.
Okay, so basically what that means, Maurice, we're going to put out your single tomorrow. That's basically what that means, because Patrick can't go rap.
So, I support you, babe. You're in the film with progress, man.
You stop
your
dream, man.
You know. So,
hey,
we're
up here.
Huh?
What an audience.
I already got the book. Let's get a single out there, too.
I know, right? I know you're right. Now, for those, I know a lot of people don't know, but I know, Patrick, this subject is something that you have more knowledge about than I do, and I will let you explain more. But, you know, as we always do, Pat, you got the first question, so let's kick this off. Let's have some fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the reason Joe put me on Front Street like that is one is because he a suckerfish. And two is because, you know, I have my oldest child has autism, so, you know, this is something that we've been dealing with. It's something that's near and dear to our hearts, and it's something that made me, you know, I was pretty excited to get to this interview, to talk to you guys, to see about your experiences and the various things you've done and the things of that nature. So, you know, I won't get too deep into it. I won't bring that up until maybe like last 10 minutes, because this ain't about me. This is about them.
It's a bridge, my brother. It's a bridge. See, you're not. It's a bridge, my brother.
No, it's not. But it's a rope bridge.
This is an
bridge,
awesome,
you know,
community.
I ain't good at tight roping. So, Maurice and Jasmine. That ain't even how you say your name, is it? It's not Maurice.
Maurice.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the southern way to say it?
That's his way. That's his way.
No, she hey, got man. Our back. That she is truly pro-black.
The South can't take that one. Mm-mm.
Bro, Joe, don't be a hater all your life, Joe.
Just to the end of the interview.
Maurice and Jasmine. Could you give us, you know, we want to know about who you guys are. You know, how you met. Why you became advocates, you know, what caused you to step out on the front street like that, you know, who took the first step, who pushed the other one, who was like, nah, I ain't trying to do all that, who was like, boy, you shut up, come on, let's go. You know, like, give us the juice. What happened?
So we met when we were, like, kids. We met when we were, like, 11 or 12 through the same church. And she kind of vanished for like 3 or 4 years. I don't really know where she went. And she popped it. You know, like 11, like she was kind of like little girly, and like 15, 16. Oh, and she was, yeah. You get, y'all guys, y'all get what I'm saying, you know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Like, oh, so I was like, yo, Sade.
Yeah. Y'all like that.
You know. I ran my little game on her. She ate it all up. ran my little game on her. She ate it all up. And we actually have been dating since we're in high school. We only each other's prom and everything. We went away to college. Well, I went to Temple University at Pan Philadelphia. She went to Villanova. Villanova's probably a bit more high profile because they just won a national championship. But they're about an hour away from each other up here in Philadelphia. So I would say, was it junior year that you got pregnant, Jess?
It was junior year.
Yeah, yeah, junior year.
I got pregnant in college. Ooh.
Yeah, so in junior year, she was in both of our junior years, she was pregnant. She gave birth at the end of our junior year to Maurice. At the time, of course, we didn't know that he would be autistic. We were just dealing with struggling college students with a child, with a regular child, regular neurotypical child, not a special needs child. So I came out of Temple in 2010. She took that year off. And came out in 2011 from Villanova. And I don't want to take the whole thing up. I don't want to let her take over. Go, you take over, Jay.
All right. So, first of all, so Reese did, you know, spin his little game at me. He got together. You know, I fell in love with him. You know, but we've been together so long, I can't even remember a day without Big Reese. So, you know. Yeah, I watched that first chin hair come in. That's how long we've been here. But, you know, we had Reese while we were in college. And, you know, I did take some time off, came right back, and still finished because I was more determined at that point because I had a child I had to finish. Once Reese was diagnosed, so let me backtrack. Reese, you know, came out, there was no real complications with the delivery. I did have a C-section, you know. But other than that, he was a happy, healthy baby. And it wasn't until, you know, first time parents were looking up, well, more so mom, my crazy mom, looking up everything like, he should be doing this at this month and he should be doing that at this month, you know, at this age. They're like, okay, we're moving right along. Uh-oh, why isn't he doing this? Okay, why is he spinning every single toy and every single thing that comes into his contact? Why, you know, doesn't he have fine motor skills? You know, at, you know, certain skills weren't there. There was eye contact, but there was limited eye contact. There was these grunting sounds that he did. There was, he did say dada at one point, but then that kind of faded off and he no longer says dada. It was just little things that was kind of, you know, spinning our wheels like, hey, something might be going on. So, of course, we got him seen by a developmental pediatrician, which at first they were trying to say 15 months, you know, to get an appointment, which a lot of families, you know, up here, I don't know how it is down there, but up here they try to make you wait as long as possible to get a diagnosis. Well, that time is crucial, because that's time that can be given to services and therapies to help, you know, your child to get, you know, on the up and up. So I pushed. That was the first time I had to literally use my voice and become an advocate for my child in a big way, where I said, no, y'all going to see him. You know, I had to do some extra stuff to get him seen sooner. So he got an appointment in 2 weeks versus the 15 months that they were trying to give us.
Right.
So we got our appointment, we went, and even though we both kind of felt as though there was something going on, you know, me being going to nursing school, you know, I was kind of thinking autism, but then I was like, you know, it might not be. So kind of having that in the back of our mind, we went in to the appointment, and it was them saying that they were giving him that diagnosis of autism, and I cried. And re-dealt with it, you know, as men deal with, you know, their emotions in their own way, we both were feeling something at that moment, like, what, you know, and we both kind of referenced this poem by Emily Kingsley called Welcome to Holland, where the whole time you're pregnant, you're preparing to go to Italy, you're destined to go to this trip that you've been thinking about for months, you know, you can't wait to get there, and then the plane lands, and you're in Holland, not Italy. You're in some completely different territory that you did not prepare for. But if you spend time reflecting on where you were supposed to be, you'll never appreciate where you are right now. So we kind of, you know, made sure that we were going to do what we had to do as parents. You know, this was a new world, a new chapter. You know, everything was new to us as parents in general, but now this diagnosis made things even more, you know, real and different. And it wasn't, you know, as Black parents as well, it wasn't something that we were faced with. You know, this was the first time, no one in my family has autism. No one in Reese's family, you know, that we knew of had autism either. So it was our first time, and, you know, we're young, and that's where our voice started to get louder and louder, and what we had to do for our son. So I think I answered your question. Maybe.
Yes, no, y'all gave us a lot. And for those that go to the website, if you listening to this on iTunes or Google Play, go to the website, and there'll be a picture of them up with their child, and you can see how significant her comment is that she was with him when his first chin hair popped in.
That's funny.
Significant statement. No, but I love the fact that, because you guys showed a level of strength even in your pushing that, you know, I go, when I listen to the autism stories, I always go back to my own experiences, and that's something that I wish I would have done. They do make you wait, and I think I waited about 2 years before I finally started pushing. And once everything gets going, like you said, it's so critical, you know, that early time that you could be spending getting the therapies, getting the things necessary. And it, you know, it's just, it's pretty cool that you guys had that strength and that sense of mind, that sense of urgency, and the, you know, the support you had amongst each other to say, no, we're not going to wait. I know you're the doctor, you're supposed to whatever, but this is my child.
Right.
And just to even tackle that, we, like we said before, we met at church. And, you know, kids, you hear kids crying and kids doing stuff all the time in church. And you always, they always get those looks, you know. Mm-hmm. That kid crying, somebody don't do this or that. And it was one specific Sunday where Reese was, you know, he has a lot of vocal stimulations that he does. So he will be like, ah, just for no reason, just because it feels good, right? And, you know, he's doing his thing, and it was at the end of service where someone who was sitting completely across from us came over and just needed to say, oh, well, maybe you can give him crayons.
I remember that.
Maybe you can give him some crayons of color, you know, keep him occupied, and maybe he won't be so bored, or something she said, so to that extent. And it was like...
That's something else to let.
Lady out in church.
Right.
Could have went to hell that day.
I was upset. I didn't know, like, she had never spoken to me before, and Reese wasn't even a youngin. Reese was like 3 or 4, so it was like he wasn't like it was known that he was autistic at this point in our church. So like I was like, who are you to be talking to me right now? You don't know me. And I think she saw my face curl up. It was just like, I got it. I'll take it from here.
Yeah, and I pretty much had to tell this lady he was special needs. He had autism. And one of the things was he didn't even have the fine motor. First of all, Reese doesn't even like to color. Let's just put that out there. And his fine motor skills are still being worked on. But this lady didn't know our son. And just like this lady in the church didn't know our son, you know, people in the world don't know him. So it started, you know, we started I Walk for Reese, just, you know, walking for autism, and we just formed this team of family and friends. But it was more, like, it initially started out of that one thing where it was like, okay, this lady in our church doesn't even know. Mm-hmm. We need to let this whole church know, and we need to let everybody know, you know, like, no. That's not okay to do. It's not okay to just assume. You need to understand. So that was one of those things where, like, let me just cure this ignorance right here by educating this lady right now.
Right.
And that's where, you know, that's where kind of like, you know, that heartbeat started, you know, to just to get that out there. I thought Reese was a catch on that.
Yeah. Lady.
So. Right. So as you mentioned education, can we take that a little further and help those of us who may not understand what autism is? Could you help us understand it further? How does it occur, and what are the different ways do you know about that it can occur in the child?
Okay. Do you want to go first, or you want me to go, Reese?
You got it.
Okay. So autism, A-U-T-I-S-M, autism. Autism currently affects 1 in every 68 children right now, which when you think of numbers, that's scary, because when Reese was diagnosed, the number was 1 in every 110 kids. And then before when Reese was born, it was 1 in 110. When he was diagnosed, it was 1 in 88, thankfully. And then now it's 1 in 68. So these numbers are growing. These numbers are growing, and so that's the rate right now. And like thinking of it on an even grander scale, like how many kids, you know, if when you think of cancer, the numbers are so much smaller. So the fact that you have autism being 1 in every 68 is scary, and it's a developmental disorder that impacts pretty much a person's ability to communicate and socialize. So for Reese is nonverbal. And that means he can't talk like you and I. He would never be able to, you know, go to school and come home and tell me about his day. He literally depends on other things to help him tell me. But there's other kids with autism who may repeat everything you say. So you might say, oh, hey, Bobby, how was your school today? And they might say, how was school today? You know, like, are you, or do you want some snacks?
Uh-oh.
Hello?
Hello?
If y'all wanted me to stop talking, you know, you could have come.
No, I mean, I promise it wasn't me. I'm
no, we're here. Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm sure what happened.
No, you good. Sorry about that.
So there's some kids who just repeat everything. There's some kids that can't talk at all. And there's some children with autism who have just very limited language as well. Or just might not have the ability to understand, like, literal things. Like, you know, when you're trying to be sarcastic, they might not, you know, pick up on that. Mm-hmm. There's such a range. So if you know one child with autism, you know one child with autism, because autism is a spectrum, meaning that it doesn't present the exact same way in every child. But the characteristics of it affecting communication and socialization are present within every child. So it's different, but it's the same, if that makes any sense. It mm-hmm. is a lifelong disorder, and there aren't any solid answers as to why children are affected, and that's why research is so, so important. There's some speculations. There has been, you know, some strides in trying to correct the code, but there is no cure, and there's no definite reason why these kids are, you know, why it's rapid now and why it even presents itself. So that's why you'll see that autism has a puzzle piece, because it's such a puzzling disorder, because we don't know where it's coming from. And so the ribbon is actually a puzzle piece pattern, and that's why. And okay. So we're searching for a cure for this growing developmental disorder, and we're trying to figure out where it's coming from, and especially, you know, soon it might be like every child, and we want to figure out, like, what's going on. So,
okay.
Reese, you want to add on to that, or?
So autism affects your communication and your interactions with others. So there's a really, really wide spectrum to some people that you wouldn't even recognize was, you know, something was off unless you, like, had a full-fledged conversation with them. To people who, you know, are practically need, like, around-the-clock observation. Before I worked at where I worked at now, I was at GameStop, and that's when I kind of started noticing, like, the autistic customers. The autistic customers, they would come in, they loved the games, and, like, you would always know if something would be off when you were going to ring them up at the counter. Like, they would, like, either avoid eye contact completely, they would, they wouldn't really like about the small talk, but they would come in the store all the time, so you would recognize them as a regular, but they would never really make a conversation with you. And that's when I kind of noticed how wide the spectrum was. And then there's another guy, we're talking about the church, David. He's a member of my church. David is autistic, and David was really involved with everything that happened at the church. And he had our phone number. He has my phone number, and he would, like, literally call every day at the same exact time for a conversation. And we, like, you know, David, I'm just busy at that time, so I can't always answer. But he would call me every day at the same time. And I've learned, I was like, well, he just, that's his routine. He knows at this time to call. And he, like, knew the phone number by heart. He would just randomly be like, hey, is your phone number still 267-255-1320? And I'll be like, yeah. Right. I was like, yeah, that's still my phone number, David. He's like, okay, just making sure. And so that was kind of my introduction to autism before my son was diagnosed. And just seeing Reese's journey and meeting so many different kids that are autistic, from, like, a parent-teacher conference at the school to an event that we may be into, like the walk events, is, like, amazing to see how many, the wide range of spectrum, and two, how many different people are affected or know mm-hmm. someone or care about someone who has been diagnosed with autism. And it's amazing that so many people know someone that's afflicted with autism, yet so many people are unaware of what autism really is.
Yeah.
So I think that's amazing, and that's kind of what sparked the fire in me to go so hard with the autism. It was just like, how can so many people know about this, but nobody know about it as well? And that's kind of like where I am with the disease now, and this is just an awesome kid, and like just to see him smile and to see his growth is gives me that will and that desire to keep going and keep going harder and keep getting stronger. I have to protect him.
Also, just want to add too, autism doesn't mean that you're mentally retarded either.
Right.
These kids are so freaking smart. Literally, one of the kids at a school we were visiting where the children had autism, he literally, you would tell him your birthday, and he would run down, no matter what year it was, all the popular movies that came out that year. So crazy. So it doesn't mean, like someone would say, I would tell someone Reese had autism, and they were like, oh, he doesn't look like he has autism. There is no look. Right. There is no look to autism. And, you know, I just always say that, you know, they just think differently. They're just wired differently. Like Reese is, you know, like they function like an iPhone or, you know, in the world functions as Samsung. It's just two different ways of thinking. Or Android, I should say. It's just two different ways of thinking. Does the same thing, is just, you know, there's a different wiring there, and there's different ways that you have to plug in information. So just, you know, I just also wanted to put that out there too, because some people are like, oh, they think of Down syndrome, or they think of, you know, just some severe mental, you know, disorder. So I also wanted to put that out there as well.
Well, I'm glad you said that part, because that's one of the reasons why we want to ask that question, so we could get more clarity to people about what autism is. And because I know through conversation that a lot of people equate autism and Down syndrome and other disorders, just lump them all in one box, in one space. So that's why I appreciate the way you broke it down, so it gives more clarity to actually what autism truly is.
Yeah, it can coexist with another disorder, but by itself, there is no look, and you know, it doesn't mean, you know, a certain look to that person or whatever.
Okay.
I definitely want to echo that in saying that it's appreciated, because, man, you'd be amazed. Well, you wouldn't be amazed, you know, but people that don't know or aren't dealing with it, either personally or through a child or caregiver to somebody that has it, it's amazing how many people you run into who, you know, will assume that there is some sort of look, you know, like, you know, well, he can't have autism. He don't look like he got one. Somebody with autism look?
Exactly. Tell me.
Because when I first walked up to you, you look like an intelligent individual.
Right.
But apparently, now I apologize. I know that's not very nice. But that's what goes through my head whenever I hear that. Well, when I walked up to you, you looked so intelligent, and then you opened your mouth, and I was like, wow. So,
exactly.
But, you know, since we're here, there is no look. There isn't one. So I'm so appreciative that you echo that sentiment, because that's like a struggle. I used to get hostile, angry, mad when people would say that to me. Like, he doesn't look. Like, what do you mean he don't look? How about I
what
bust you in
look
the
like?
Face and let's ask you how you look?
But seriously, though, in all seriousness, it does make you very angry to hear that.
Right, it does. Yeah. And it's taught me patience, and like not just patience in dealing with a special needs child, but patience in dealing with people.
Right. Yeah. That man, a round of applause for that.
Yeah. You can see a lot of patience in dealing with people who speak not necessarily because they're trying to be offensive, because I don't think someone saying, right, oh, he doesn't look like there's anything wrong with you, I don't think that they have any malice in their heart when they're saying that. But they speak out of ignorance in the true meaning of the word, that they aren't aware that what they're saying is ignorant. I posted something on Facebook like last year. It was just like things you shouldn't say to a parent with a special needs child. And it was like a list of 10 things that I just came up with. And that was one of them on there. Like, he doesn't look this way. And people were like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that I've ever done that to you. And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, I understand ignorance, and that you understand people's ignorance and not meaning to be rude or not meaning to be malicious in what it is that they're saying, but generally not knowing what to say or how to respond to your situation.
It's like some sort of crazy sideways compliment, because they always say,
right,
it like you're going to say thank you. I'm sorry.
Right.
That's
right.
I was thinking that he don't look like he has autism too.
Like, yeah, you don't think so?
Right.
You know, it's one of the things, like, you hear, like, I was, you know, I deal with a lot of young people as well, and even a lot of the older people that I've dealt with that have become, well, they were younger when I was first dealing with them, and now they're older. And when you get, like, dark-skinned girls, this is it's amazing, the parallels for me. When someone walks up to them and says, oh, you're pretty for a dark-skinned girl, you know, it's
right,
kind of the same thing. It's like, wait, what? Was that a compliment? Or was
right.
That's how I equate that whole, you know, he looks normal for someone. I actually had somebody say that to me. He looks normal for someone with autism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when the white folks tell us we speak so well.
Right. Yeah. Really. So articulate. Now, you know what?
Well, next time you come around, I'll be sure to drop some of my syllables off my
word. Right. So,
but
now, go ahead. My bad.
Excuse me. I was wondering, when you guys talked about how you processed the diagnosis, and that's always an interesting subject for me, relating it back to how I processed, because, like, you guys had the strength and the support to push. When I was going through a lot of this, largely it was just me and my son. And I went through an immediate stage of denial, which is why I kind of let so many things go. Because I was like, no, it's nothing. Because, you know, like, all the way up until maybe 2 years old, he was perfectly fine. And then it was like you started noticing, wait a second, something is, you know, like we... He was doing this, and now he's not doing that anymore. But instead, he's doing this, and you know, and then he due to the stem movements and the running back and forth,
and the toe walking,
in the room, bouncing off the wall, and I mean, he still does that now, and he's 13. He's in the room, running back and forth, and room, bang, 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 bang. But when we finally did get the diagnosis, I remember there was still that, like, just like a refusal to accept. No. And a lot of that was ignorance. I didn't really know what the diagnosis meant, but still it was like, no. No, 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 no. Like, did you guys, did either one of you go through any of that where, you know, it was just like, no, this can't be?
Well, absolutely, I did. One, my son's a junior, so he's named after me. Two, he's a son. So, you know, you got a bully on the way, and you're like, oh, I can't wait to take him to play basketball, play football with him, put him on the teams. My oldest brother coaches football, so I was like, I could get him on my oldest brother's football team. And, you know, he's named after me. He's going to be this amazing athlete. He's going to do all these great and amazing things with sports. And then, like, he gets diagnosed with autism, and I'm like, okay, he's still going to play sports. And then, like, more time comes by, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, my whole namesake is, you know, you get, initially it was just like, I don't want to talk about this. Like, you know, that's just kind of how it was for like maybe the first year, because it took us about like a year before we started talking to people about the fact that he had a diagnosis. It was just like, no, nothing, you know, We're not going to speak that into existence. You know, we're just going to proceed. If, you know, there's nothing going on here. And that's the worst thing possible that you can do. It's not talk to people about it, because if you don't talk about it, one, you're not helping yourself accept it. You're not moving past it on your own. And two, you're closing off a bunch of potential supporters. For example, had I never said anything about it, I would have never met Carl. And if I never met Carl, I would have never been on this podcast right now. So, you know, so... Because I think Carl's brother has autism, Joe. I'm not sure if you knew about that. I believe his older brother has autism. So just speaking to people, you build your network, you build supporters. And there's people who may not be directly afflicted, but they have a heart for you and they care about you as a human being. So they want to help you out because they see that there are things that they can do to help you out. So the denial period, I think, is natural for anything. Anything, not just a diagnosis of a child, like if you're breaking up in a relationship or something, or you get fired from your job, like you're initially kind of like, oh my gosh, this didn't really happen at first. So I think that's a natural course of thinking to go down, but the worst possible thing you can do is stay in there with us.
Right. I was just saying, just to build on that, what you were saying, like any type of loss, you know, quote unquote, loss that you have, you're always going to go through those five stages of grief, and one of them is denial. Isn't that, it doesn't have to be the first thing. It can be, you know, the second, third, fourth, or fifth. You know, there's no order, but that is one of the stages. And eventually you do reach acceptance, you know, which is one of the other ones. But for me, like I would, before he actually got the diagnosis, my head was kind of thinking that maybe he did, but you know, in talking to certain people, you know, certain people aren't really your friends. They just want to tell you whatever that's going to try to make you happy in the moment. And I had a lot of those people just say, no, he's just a boy, and boys take longer to develop, and boys don't do this. And sorry, guys, I know you all are males, but this is what the females are saying. You know, boys, you know, they're just a little delayed. You know, don't worry. And, you know, as your first child, you don't really know what to expect. And so my thing was, you know, part of me believed, yeah, maybe it is because he's a boy. No. You know, and there was that part. Once he got the diagnosis, I think I was more so on the, okay, I just want to help him, you know. And I saw Reese's stages of emotions going. And I was like, you know, one of us got to be strong.
You're just going to put me on blast, Sunday.
Yeah, down and out. I know Reese will eventually catch up, so I need to, you know, help him, you know, and help little Reese, you know, at the same time. But in all seriousness, you're always going to go through that denial.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always going to go through that anger phase. You're going to go through that questioning phase. Well, why is happening? Blaming yourself. And eventually you get to that point where you accept it and you do something about it. Mm-hmm. So there's no right or wrong way, you know, and there's no right or wrong timeline to go through that, but you do go through that.
Right. Okay. So one of the things that you guys also did within your advocacy is created a book. You wrote a book, Reese Wants Cereal. So, Jasmine, you are actually the author of the book. So, can you tell us more about the book, why you wrote the book, and why you chose this particular title for the book?
Yes. Okay. So, we just spent all this time talking about Reese has autism, and Reese is nonverbal. But one of the biggest things Reese is also known for is eating Kellogg's Crispix brand cereal.
I don't know if we can say that on the air. I'm messing around. I'm messing around. Like, do we got the copyright?
Let me go back.
them cereals.
This particular cereal that I can't say the name of. We're not advertising them. But,
we do not own the rights to that cereal.
Yeah. So Reason really, really loves this one particular cereal, and he would not eat any other type of cereal. Would not even eat the generic version of this cereal. And so we went through boxes and boxes of this particular cereal. He would not eat junk food. Like, he just didn't like the taste of candy and chips and all of that. Like, you know, he's already a picky eater, but he really just wanted this cereal. So given that a lot of his therapy was geared towards reward systems and having him repeat, you know, whatever the desired behavior was, by rewarding him, we used that cereal as a tool for helping him, one, walk and get over some sensory challenges that he had. And also the biggest thing was to learn different types of communication because, like I said, he's not able to use his voice to tell me what he needs and what he wants. And oftentimes when a person in general can't use their voice to communicate, they get very, very frustrated. I don't know if you know anybody that's had a stroke or whatever, but a lot of times if you have a stroke, you lose some people, depending on what type of stroke you have, you lose that ability to communicate the way you used to. And so I see it working where I am now. I see that a lot. But just knowing, you know, if you went to a foreign country and you're the only one that speaks English and you're over there speaking Chinese, and you're over here like, I'm hurting, my stomach hurts, I need some medicine, whatever, and they don't understand what you're saying. You want to start throwing some stuff so you can be heard, like grabbing people, you know, whatever you need to do to get them to understand that you want what you want. So Reese would often get frustrated when he couldn't get what he wanted. And so in the book, so in general, like we used cereal to teach him how to communicate via picture icons, some modified sign language, and also a communication device. So that's so he's a lot better communicating now. But in the book, he wants his beloved cereal, and he's trying to tell his mom that he wants his cereal, and he's doing everything, getting frustrated, screaming, crying, yelling, pulling on her clothes because he wants his cereal, but he can't tell his mom via his voice that he wants a cereal, and he comes up with a different strategy, pictures or sign language, to tell her what he wants, and he gets what he wants because he found a way to communicate with her, to tell her. So that is what the book is about. It shines a light on autism. It also shines a light on just differences in individuals and just, you know, as a children's book, you're showing this to kids, you're reading this to kids as an adult, so you both kind of go through this story along with Reese understanding that, hey, this child is different, this book is different, and let's understand, like, okay, there might be another reason why this child is acting out, or children with autism have difficulties communicating, and therefore you're shining a light on that, shining a light on differences and appreciating the differences in other people. Understanding that as a child, you grow up to be more compassionate and less ignorant and as an adult. And so that's my little way of changing the world one book at a time, just, you know, trying to cure the ignorance. Right. And that's why I wrote the book.
But now one of the things I'm hearing is you also giving other parents and other people tools to help them be able to communicate with their child who may their communication may be affected. So you basically are helping other people out. You may not even thought about that, but you're helping other people out once they read the book and once they learn more about the book of different things that they can use, different strategies and tactics that they can use to really communicate with their children. So.
Yes. So that was like one of the added things also. Initially it was, I wanted to write a book about Reese and shine a light on what he goes through and help other people. And then going through, you know, everybody's been buying this book and they're just like, you know, this book is just great for everybody, you know, but more so understanding Reese's struggles as well and how that translates to other children who may be going through what he's going through as well. Also, which I forgot to mention, is part of each book, part of the proceeds go towards autism research and support. So giving back to, you know, fuel research for the autism community and also support for the individuals. But yes, like you were saying, it also becomes a tool as far as educating those who may not know to deal with right. children who go through this.
Right. And did you have, since you released the book, did you have any unexpected successes or impacts or ways to impact other people? Did anything unexpected happen as a result of your advocacy or you writing this book that just kind of reassured that what you were doing is something that is meant for you to do?
So one day we went to a birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
And the little girl whose birthday it was, she had read the book. Her mom had bought it for her. She read the book. And actually when we approached the door to be let inside the party, Reese actually had a bag of cereal that he was eating from. And she was like, oh, my God, Reese really does love cereal. So it's a true story. So we're at this birthday party. Reese is doing his thing. He's flapping his hands. He's walking on his tippy toes. He's making loud. Birthday, just because it feels good. That's, you know, another thing that he does. And another child who was sitting there who had not read the book was just staring at him. And he asked the little girl whose birthday it was, what is wrong with him? Like, why is he doing that? And before I could get up and intervene, she was like, well, don't you know? Reese has autism, and he's not able to talk like me. Like, she went off on this kid. And I was sitting there smiling like, ooh. I'm like thinking like, oh, yes. And she was like, and he loves cereal. Next time, read the book. And she like went to go find the book. And it was like, here. And I was like, is this happening right here? Like, this happened right before my eyes. And I was like, oh, my gosh. This is exactly like what I wanted. Like, you know. So that is so reassuring to see that actually play out like that. And I was like, well, I wonder, you know, if this is happening right now, like, I wonder how many other scenarios that have happened, you know, amongst the kids that have gotten this book as well. So that was just like, wow.
That's good.
Wow. So amazing. I can also say that this book is also a tool for literacy as well. So right now it's currently at one of the Children's Hospitals Reach Out and Read program here in Philadelphia. And so on top of, you know, the message, it's also, you know, an easy to read book. So that children are, you know, they see the front of the book and they're like, oh, cereal.
Right.
And they open it and they want to read it, you know. So, you know, on top of the message that it's delivering, you know, it's also helping kids, you know, with literacy as well. So that's an unexpected thing that I'm seeing
right.
as well.
Okay.
Dope.
I know, right?
No, I like to hear the little girl snapping. Kids are crazy.
Oh, my God. It was just so funny. And her theme was, have you ever heard of The Descendants on the Disney Channel? Is this whole, you know, Disney Channel just has a bunch of characters now. And they have this show called The Descendants where it's like the kids of all the villains. So she was dressed up as one of these villain kids, and she was snapping on this little boy. If you could just picture that.
That
was definitely a sight to see.
So Maurice.
I'm here.
Well, you sound so excited.
Nah. I'm here.
So you have a background in business administration and marketing to help raise funds for autism. Is that correct?
Yeah. I got my bachelor's in marketing and business administration and marketing.
Oh, shoot.
That's at 2010 Temple University. TU.
Yes, sir.
That's not TU, not Tallahassee, but Temple.
Joe. Anyway. How successful have you been at, you know, raising funds, raising awareness, and things of that nature. And what advice would you give to others who are trying to raise funds and awareness for a good cause?
So the good thing about having a marketing degree is I did a bunch of internships where I was just in charge of startup companies, viral marketing, so I was running all their social media pages, blog postings, and things of that nature. So when we started, for Reef, I was familiar with dealing with the startup, quote-unquote, company. At the time that we started it up, we actually didn't think we were going on, like, the company standpoint. We kind of just were like, oh, we're doing this autism walk. We need to name our team, and we're going to call it I Walk for Reef, because that's, you got to have a name to get a team in the autism walk. But so at the time, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, I kind of know when's the best time of day to post, what's too much, because I feel like we all have that Facebook friend who does something, and they post about it so much that you block them out. Like, you just like, okay, I get it. I'm so tired of seeing this. I don't want to see it anymore. So I kind of know, like, when it's too much, when's the best time of day to post it so that everyone will see it when they get online, how to be concise yet effective, because people don't like to read. Like, if you see a post and it says continue reading, you're probably not going to read it all. So how to just kind of be concise and get everything you want to get across, but in a way that people will be able to read it and not kind of check out or look at it and be like, oh, that's too long, I'm not reading that. Just good graphics to put up with posts. People are more likely to pay attention to a post if it's a picture attached to it, and not just words. So things along that nature were really helpful in pushing the actual walk. And another thing was just following up with people. So as people joined the team posting, hey, shout out to Joe Ward for joining our walk team. We really appreciate it. Then someone else will see that, oh, what's this walk team? Oh, here it is right here. And that's another thing. So responding to people's inquiries, I feel like a big issue I see with a lot of like startup business owners is, and I get you spend a lot of money on this website, so you want people to go to them, but I think the easiest way you can turn away potential customers or potential clients is if someone's inquiring about your business and your response to them is on the website. And I know the information is on the website, but if someone's coming directly to you, I feel like you should be able to give them a response. So things like that were things that we were able to avoid because I had that experience when I was in college and dealing with those companies. And the first year that we did the walk, we raised close to $5,000, if I'm correct. And that was, you know, with no real fundraisers, just pretty much posting about it on social media. And to date, I think we're around $13,000. That's not including the proceeds that the book made this year. That's just fundraising that we did for Autism Speaks for the Autism Walk. We've actually kind of ran into the hiccup now where people don't want to give the money to Autism Speaks. They kind of just want to give it directly to us. So that was also added motivation. Well, actually, I guess it's not an issue. It's a good thing. But a lot of people are like, I just want to give the money to you guys. I don't want it to go to Autism Speaks. I want it to go directly to your son. So that's kind of why we had to take our walk for Reef from just a walk team to more of a nonprofit, more of a business standpoint, because it was like, well, we can't just take your money and be like, okay, we'll put it to good use and pull up in a BMW next week.
Right. And the fans looking for you.
Right. Pull up in a BMW, move on up to the east side. So we've been really successful, though, in a financial standpoint in raising funds. Even with the book signing, we've already sold over 500 books.
Since July.
And we have a bunch of events booked. Jasmine was just at an event yesterday. We had this one. I'm supposed to go into a back-to-school night on Tuesday, actually. So we have a bunch of things lined to present the book. So we have a bunch of things lined up on the schedule to push more things. We both have people talking to us all the time, like, hey, I want you to come out and speak about the book. I want you to come out and speak about the book. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, we both have full-time jobs. How do we squeeze all of this in?
Y'all full-time advocates now.
Right. So yeah. It's been really, really successful, and it's amazing to see just how, as not just as African-Americans coming together, but all races coming together, because it's not just black children that are affected. There's black, white, Puerto Rican, Chinese, European, all different ethnicities come together to surround and ritual in all hands. There's no dissension, no racial divides, none of that stuff. Just to see everyone hand in hand in that issue, it's just amazing to see the cohesiveness, but especially within the black community, just that cohesiveness of everybody kind of coming together and not fighting and not killing each other and not arguing and just standing together on one issue. And you see the power that it is within our community just from the diagnosis of my son. And that's just amazing to me to see.
Right. That,
I know we'll get there.
Yes. I mean, we applaud your efforts, though. We definitely, definitely applaud your efforts. Now, you told us about I Walk for Reese. Now, how can people learn more about I Walk for Reese? I Walk for Reese. How can people support I Walk for Reese?
You got it, Liz.
So, I Walk for Reese, IWALK, the number 4, RECE. Can we actually have a website, so iwalkforreese.com. So you can learn more about it there. We're also posting like crazy, so you can also follow us on social media, jasmine.pool on Facebook, maurice.rush, or Maurice, what's your Facebook?
Maurice Rush. I don't know. In Philadelphia, not the one in Michigan. It is. This one is a Maurice D. Rush in Michigan, but that's not me. I'm the one that's Philadelphia.
On Instagram, you can follow me at jazz.pool, and Maurice is Rush Zilla with 3 L's.
You like that, Zilla.
Okay. So we're also posting like crazy, so you can follow us on social media as well. And also, you can also reach out to us. So whether it's email, through the website, just messaging us on Facebook as well. We're really eager to respond and answer any questions.
That's cool. So before we get to our world famous question, because that's Patrick's favorite question, but you also were talking about public speakers. So, through your journey from the time that you guys first met, from when you had your first child and had your son, and then learned that your son had autism, and where you are now, what have you learned about yourselves as individuals and as a couple? What new things have you learned about yourselves, and what goals have you set for yourselves moving forward to be better human beings, better parents, better husband, better wife, just better people overall?
I've just learned the resilience in me, the fight that is within me. It's so easy, especially being me, myself, being an African-American male from the inner city projects in North Philadelphia. It was so easy for me to, like, fail. Like, it's easy because that's almost expected of me. So I could, like, go get locked up and go to jail. And no one would bat a finger because that's what you expect of an inner city male from the projects. But you see that resilience in that fight, that desire to not quit, that desire to not fail. And just in every hurdle that's come along the way with Maurice, my son, it comes out more. So they say, no, he can't do this. And I'm like, yes, he will do this. Not even, yes, he can do this. Yes, he will do this. Just that positivity, that optimism. And that desire to like I've always said, I wanted his life to be better than mine. And I won't let his diagnosis change that. I still want his life to be better than mine. And it just makes me want it even more now, want it even greater now, to introduce him to a better situation, better surroundings, better everything that he gets. I just want it to be better than what it is that I had to experience growing up. I hear a crap in there. So just like the inner fighter in me, the inner hustler, so to speak, in me, just comes out more and more as I do with my son's diagnosis.
Right. Okay.
I would say for me, so I was very, very shy. Like the thought of even talking to you guys on the phone would have been the scariest thing ever. I can say that having Reese and going through this journey has taught me ultimate patience, because you really, really have to be patient. And you, for me, also just trying to figure out what the underlying thing can be. So trying to figure out the whole story before I react. So that has been one of the biggest things for me, is just learning patience and having a heart, you know, that it's bigger than myself, bigger than anyone or, you know, anything. So I think that would be the biggest thing. And I know that the patience is there, because even when I'm at work, certain little things that would take everybody else off do not affect me the same way. And people are like, oh, you're so nice. Or, oh, my gosh, you got the patience of a saint, child, because I would not be able to do that. And I'm like, well, it's so easy. It's so easy for me to be patient here, because when I go home, there's a whole nother battle that I'm fighting. And just, you know, learning that I can do that within myself. Also learning that I actually have this voice to talk to other people. Like I said, I would be so scared to talk to you guys. So scared. Like when we did our first walk, I spoke to over 15,000 people. And that was, you know, never, ever, ever what I had ever thought that I would be able to do that. So just, you know, being able to speak to others, having patience, and then, you know, just doing everything that I'm doing with Reese, I just different. You know, it's something I had never, ever imagined myself doing.
Well, we appreciate you all for doing what you are doing, because more people are able to learn, especially more people within the Black community are able to learn about autism. And, erase the ignorance and be able to have more allies as well, even those who may not have members of their family who are affected by autism, or may not even know that they have members of their family. But we all can still be allies for each other, just period, because we're human beings, we're Black people, we're all in the same community, and we have we're all facing a lot of these issues together. Not every single issue, but we're facing a lot of these issues together. So, one of the reasons why we have you on, because we, you know, making sure that Freedom Train is an ally as well. So, thank you all for what you are doing.
I'm now, seriously grateful for the opportunity to be on this show, to even, you know, continue these efforts as well. So thank you.
No problem. No problem. Now, we had our final question, and this is Patrick's favorite question. And so, he thank you special, so we set it up like this to make him feel good.
Nervous.
So, Joe the Duck. If you were the all-knowing, all-powerful rulers of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
I want to go first, man.
I'll go second.
For me, it was just, so I work in a welfare office. I'm a caseworker. I've been doing it for the last 5 years for welfare. I deal with, I would say it's maybe like 90% African American clients and 10% like other races. So I would say to our people, stop fighting one another. Come together, guys. You just see it. I see it all the time at work, the way mothers talk to their children, the way grandmothers talk to grandbabies, and the way we talk to one another. The infighting, it just has to stop. We can't tackle our oppressors if we're busy fighting. Like, we can't come together to tackle the oppressors if we're too busy fighting one another all the time and arguing with one another and holding back one another. I've seen so many times where people just hate each other. Like, we just hate each other. Like, you just... It's like, I can't even come with another way to say it. Like, we do not love one another. And it's so accepted at this point that when you do love one another, people, like, frown upon it. Mm. Within our community, like, it's so accepted at this point that you hate and fight one another, that when you do something to look out for another person that's African-American, someone has some sly remark, I want to dead that, or you shouldn't have dead that, or you better than me. And it's like, why? Why am I better than you? I don't have to be better than you. Like, everything that was afforded to me, I don't have enough time to tell you my whole story, but some of the things that I've seen, some of the things that I've been through, I know that the next person can come through it. We just have to love on one another, stop fighting one another, and come together.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. How am I going to go after that? With a reason. Oh, man. If I was the all-powerful ruler, oh, my goodness. Probably, Black America, I would probably make sure that we all read a book. Because knowledge is power. And, you know, me being powerful is one thing, but we all have the power to be great, and there's greatness in all of us. So, and I think the more we read, the more we're in tune, the more knowledge that we have, we can actually be that, you know, what we want to be, but also knowing how to be. So I would say to make sure that everybody is reading and gaining that knowledge.
Cool. Because, I mean, there you go, Patrick, like to record the answers. So, but this is the one, I told you this is one question. It make him feel special. So, they didn't let him out of the house when he was young, so.
They did not. Okay. But you know who else didn't go outside when they was young?
Who, me?
Nasir Jones. Ooh, burn. Somebody called the fire department. I just said it all.
But you don't want to freestyle, but it's all good. It's all good. It's all good.
Look, Joe, this, you know what? We got guests.
So, good job. Good job, Wes.
Right. Reason to do it.
Nah, because Joe trying to be, you know, Joe trying to, Joe just, you know what, Joe?
Nope.
Your hairline.
But it's all
no
good.
Said.
Forget you, man. Hey, LeBron James. If you want to throw out Nas, LeBron James hairline. Look at his hairline. Look how popular it is. Same hairline.
Man.
LeBron James got a sweatband on.
Forget you. Okay.
Before we wrap home, Joe.
I know,
come on,
right?
Man. Come on, ball. Just there. Let it go.
Yeah, I got that Wolverine, so I got to. But for one more time, could you give?
I got
could you tell everybody? Could you tell everybody where they can contact you on social media and your website again?
Yes. So the website again is iwalk4reese.com. We're also coming up with another organization as well, so look out for the Maurice Rush Foundation, which we am. Rush, R-U-S-H, foundation.org. You can contact us on Facebook at jasmine.pool and Instagram, jazz, jas.pool. And Reese, I'm going to let you tell everybody your
So you can find me on Facebook at Maurice D. Rush, not the one in Michigan, the one in Philadelphia. And on Instagram, I am Rushzilla, R-U-S-H-Z-I-L-L-L-A. So there's three L's because two L's was taken because right. apparently someone else calls themselves Rushzilla in the world. And, yeah, that's how you can reach me. Or you can email me. My email address is mdrush910@gmail.com. So you can reach out to me there to find me as well. You know, you don't use Facebook or Instagram, or you're one of those people that hate social media. Right. We're accessible through there. And just message me, you know. Very
remember. Oh, okay. Right. My email as well. I almost forgot. Jpool, J-P-O-O-L-E, at iwalkforeast.com.
Okay. And everybody... And everybody, make sure you go to Amazon, go and get your copy of Reese Wants Serious. So go to Amazon and get. And is Amazon the only place where the book is, or is it any other places?
Amazon and also the iWalkForReese.com.
iWalkForReese.com and Amazon. Get your copy of Reese Wants Serious, so you too can be in the know and get educated and become an advocate.
You know what?
Yes. And if you got that Prime on Amazon, you can get it in 1 to 2 days.
There you go.
You know, my wife has a BS in nursing.
Mm-hmm. What did you say?
His wife has a BS in.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Nurses unite. But we got a lot in common. Your wife is a nurse, and you both are awesome parents.
I know black nurses are, well, she's always, you know, there's like black female nurses, and y'all got superpowers, and black nurses unite, and it's all over the internet and everywhere.
We do. Black nurses rock.
Yeah, that's what it's called. I knew it was something.
Yeah.
That's cool. How long have I been nursing?
A long time.
That's cool though. That's 2017 cool. Because I'm on your website right now. It looks good, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool. We ain't gonna hold y'all all day because we could talk all day and know y'all got lives and things. But once again, thank you all for coming by the Freedom Train, and we will be in touch, especially when you guys have upcoming projects and things. We want to make sure that we be a part of helping you get the word out and even bring you back on the train in the future. So thank you, Maurice. Thank you, Jasmine, once again, for your information and your time. And we will definitely speak with you later.
My man. Thank you, Joe.
All right. And next time talk, we're expecting a freestyle, okay?
I know, right?
Oh, no, we got you. We got the we actually already got a song. Joe did the rapping. I was the Flavor Flav.
We're going to drop our mixtape soon. We got you, though.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us, guys.
Yeah. No problem. See you guys later.
All right, guys. You have a great day.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Hey. Pat.
If you don't know, now you know.
Chicka. Yeah. So, man, hey, man, this is the Freedom Train. Y'all know how we do it. Make sure y'all check us out. Make sure y'all subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes and Google Play. Subscribe to our Freedom Train YouTube channel because it goes down there. And I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. Thank you to Maurice Rush, Jasmine Poole. And make sure you go get a copy of Jasmine's book, Reese Wants Cereal, on Amazon and their website, iwalkforreese.com. So, hey, until next time, two fingers in the air like a player. Tell them over there that I hi-hat on the snare. And if you don't know, now you know. Peace.